You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Well, our next guest, William Lobdell, is a journalist with the LA Times who used to cover the religion beat for like 8 years. He's earned several national awards for his work before becoming a Metro editor for the paper in 2006. He's currently on leave writing a book tentatively titled, and I love this, Jesus Wept, like it's the only verse I've memorized, for HarperCollins about how he lost his faith while covering the religion stuff for the LA Times. And today, joining us is the man himself, William Lobdell. Man, I'm telling you, this is wild stuff, Bill.
It's very unexpected when I started off writing about religion. I got in there because I thought it would deepen my faith, and unfortunately, it was quite the opposite.
Okay, I don't even know where to start. I've got like 19 pages of notes for you because I'm so intrigued by your journey. And I guess I need to start with, what were some of the wackier things that blew your head while you were covering the religion beat? Like, would it be the TBN Paul Crouch kind of goofy stuff, or the Benny Hinn stuff, or the Catholic priest fooling around with boys? I mean, what was it?
Well, the Catholic priests were very difficult. It wasn't because of the molesting priests. It was because of the bishops who covered for them. And so this wouldn't have been a scandal at all if there were virtually any bishops that would actually call the police or get the priests out of ministry. And it was really disheartening to see the TBN stuff, Trinity Broadcasting. I did a 2-year investigation into them and into Benny Hinn. That didn't bother me because they're sort of who they are, and it's right there out on the surface. But what really stuck with me is I could not get anybody, mainstream pastors, many of them who appeared on their shows like Billy Graham and Greg Laurie and Robert Schuller, none of them would criticize what was going on there because they didn't want to lose their time slot.
Yeah, you know, I was just telling our co-host today, I was driving down here, I've had a lot of people ask me what my show is about, how do I concisely describe it? And I was just driving down from out in the sticks where I live, and I thought, you know, one way to describe our show is we talk about stuff churches and other Jesus shows don't, can't, or won't because they're donor-based.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not donor-based, so we go there, but it is very frustrating when you see around you people that won't say what needs to be said because they're afraid of the paycheck scenario.
Yeah, it's, you know, I as a Christian, you know, I read the Bible, of course, and it says that, you know, when you become a Christian, it's a life of sacrifice, and you're, you know, there's going to be, it's going to be tough at times, and there is just, there's very, very few people, and I'm talking, you know, I think in the, you know, 1 or 2 or 3% range that really sacrifice truly for their faith. And, you know, to me, you could take that a couple different ways, but to me, ultimately, I just found that it's because they didn't believe, and that faith wasn't real for most of them, and it wasn't, you know, it turned out it wasn't real for me.
Okay, so why did you buy into the Jesus scene initially?
You know, it was kind of a typical story. I grew up in the church, Episcopalian, sort of a Catholic light, and went to, as soon as I got out of high school, stopped going to church, had just a horrendous series of events, mostly brought on by myself, and was sort of on my knees at the time, and someone said, you know what's missing in your life is God, and so went back to church, went to an evangelical mega church, and just, you know, I loved everything about it. I loved the study of the Bible, I loved the songs, I loved, you know, the fellowship, you know, and I really took it hook, line, and sinker.
Did they do any worship dancing at the on
no,
stage?
Worship
or
dancing,
ribbons
no.
Or flags? Or, did you get into that?
No, but it was close. It was close. I mean, they had really great music. It was like, you know, it's like you're getting a Broadway show every Sunday. But I really got into the Bible, and I was in a Bible study group, small group, went on retreats.
Boy, you're dropping all the right phrases here. You know what I mean? Like, you know, when Jesus people try to figure out, well, sorry, let me say that again. When evangelicals try to sniff out whether another person who claims to be a Christian is really, you know, really a Christian, there's the catchphrases, right?
Yeah.
And you're dropping them all.
Well, Well, when I wrote the story about my journey and how it ended, it was really nice. Is it reaffirmed my faith in people, because the response was I got about 2,600 personal emails in addition to hundreds to the paper, and I would say 99% of them were nice in their own way. Some, you know, atheists congratulating me on joining their crowd, Christians trying to get me back. But most of the people, and this kind of goes to your show, that said, well, thank God we can talk about doubt in an open and honest way. And they said that we can't do it in our church. And we had, pastors, many pastors, who said, you know, I have doubts and I can't tell anybody.
That's pathetic. That really is. There's a guy, Daniel Taylor, wrote a book called The Myth of Certainty. I was talking to him a little while ago, and a great phrase I picked up from his writings is that he feels that doubt is more compatible to faith than certainty. Would you resonate with that?
Yeah, sure, of course. And you've got someone like Mother Teresa who...
Oh, yeah.
You know, 50 years.
50 years of the dark. What is it? The dark times or the dark?
Dark night of the soul.
Dark night of the soul. That was the phrase. Yeah.
And she couldn't tell. She could tell one person, her mentor, spiritual mentor, and she was, you know, this tortured woman. And, you know, and I think people would. I mean, she's going to go down as being this great saint who kept the faith despite, you know, being the appearance that God withdrew from her life. You know, I would have a different take at this point in my journey, which is, you know, she didn't feel God because her, you know, God wasn't there.
Hmm.
But you can debate these things. I'm not, you know, I think what resonated with the readers is I'm not an evangelical atheist. You know, I really miss my faith. I'd really like to get it back. But the other thing that I got a lot of comments on was when I said that I always thought faith was a choice. You know, you're going down the road. Which road are you going to go? You're going to go with Jesus, go someplace else. And I found just for myself, it wasn't a choice at all. It was something deep inside of me that clicked on at one point. It clicked off at another point, and no matter what I did, I couldn't turn that back on.
There must be a mourning process that you've had, almost like a divorce.
Yeah, it was pretty huge. I mean, for a long time, I was in denial, and even though I just couldn't set foot in a church, and I made all these excuses why I couldn't. And then, there's a sadness. There's also a panic, like, what, you know, when I die, am I just going to... rot there and that's it, or am I going to go to hell if I'm wrong? And it was probably 2 years before everything kind of settled down and understood what was going on.
We are on the phone with William Lobdell, who is a former religion beat reporter for the LA Times, and the phrase you're now toting is reluctant atheist.
Yes, that's how I describe myself.
See, I've read some other, you had said, I think in a quote, you use the term agnostic, and now you've kind of gone over to using the term atheist.
Well, you know, those terms are very fluid. You know, I don't believe there's a personal God that looks after us. You know, is there some God that, you know, created everything and started this whole thing in motion? You know, I don't know. I mean, I kind of don't think so, but I think it's hard to do label. These terms are, you know, everybody has a different... definition for them.
You know, in mourning the loss of this whole, I guess, psyche and lifestyle, I mean, everything, I think you said in your article that people were either born with faith / religion or not. So were you born with it or were you not? Because I don't think
were. I didn't say born with it. I just think that people have this gift of faith or they don't. It may come in for different reasons.
Right.
It goes back to, you know, it's kind of like being, you know, if you're in love with somebody and, you know, because of a series of experiences in your life, you fall out of love. It's, you can't just say, you know, okay, I'm going to force myself to be in love with that person.
Why not? I mean, come on, you know where I'm going with this whole, I mean, we're pretty consumeristic here in North America, right? And if we base our love choices on emotional, you know, I feel like I'm going to love you, and if I don't feel like I'm loving you, then I'm going to get out of the relationship. There needs to be a commitment or a choice
sure,
or a choosing
sure,
thing, right? I mean,
right,
come on, you've woken up some mornings, and your wife has breathed on you with that horrendous morning breath, and you've just gone, oh, do I want to be married to this?
She always smells like roses.
Oh, you are good.
But I've been married almost 20 years, so you know I understand that. But I think with with faith, it's like, I mean, with me, I mean, you're going to have, you know, good periods and bad periods. And I did. I was a hardcore Christian for, you know, 15 years, I would say. But
do you have any bumper stickers or what would
no,
Jesus do? Bracelets
never,
or anything?
I never did that.
Well,
I did raise my hands a couple times.
Oh, no. That seals it right there.
But, you know, at some point it's just gone, and, you know, I struggled for many years, or several years, to get it back. And then I started realizing, you know what, maybe I can consider that God or a personal God doesn't exist. And as I explored that, I look at scientific studies. I just sort of explored the behavior between evangelicals and the rest, and just, you know, atheists, basically. There's virtually no difference, and in fact, their divorce rates are more. They're more racist, and they're more giving. I mean, there's some on the other side of the ledger,
sure,
too. But,
sure.
I just thought, like, you know, if Christianity is real, shouldn't, on the whole, Christians act differently?
Oh, man, have I said that a few thousand times on the show?
Yeah, and, you know, and...
But yet, hold on. But at the same time, I look in the mirror every morning and go, what an idiot I am.
No, I'm not saying, yeah, I mean, I'm like the worst, you know, I'm probably the worst Christian ever, but but there should be, as, you know, as the body as a whole, there should be a statistical difference,
yeah,
if this is real. And, you know,
if Jesus coming into our hearts is some sort of transformational, supernatural reality, there should be a noticeable difference.
Yeah, and you know where I notice the difference is on the margins of Christianity, the people on the far right and people on the far left.
Really?
I mean, really far right, really far left. And those are the people that I think really believe what they read in the Gospels, and they're going to carry it out, you know, how they think it should be carried out.
Yeah. So are you saying that you noticed the biggest differences in, I don't know, gay pastors or Fred Phelps?
Yeah. You know, when I go to a house that's the Catholic Worker, which they're basically communists, and they just invite anybody into their home to live. And so this one house has 200 people that are, you know, drunks and schizophrenics, and I mean, it just looks like you're like one flew the cuckoo's nest when you go in there.
Hmm.
But they believe that's, and these are like former salespeople that made, you know, six-figure salaries, and now they're living on $10 a week in room and board, and, you know, they believe that's what they're commanded to do by the scriptures. And, you know, on the other side of the coin, if you go to the Jewish faith, you know, you look at the Orthodox Jews, I mean, they take what the Bible says very, very seriously. And I just don't see people in the great middle doing that.
Here's a quote from you. I look at people volunteering at the Catholic Worker in Santa Ana and see the radical works of the gospel in action. I guess if more people acted out their faith that way, and then you say, I certainly didn't, the religion would have more credibility. Now, taking that into account, and then kind of throwing into the mix the scripture that says faith without works is dead, if you sucked at putting your faith in action, maybe that's what happened. Your faith got dead. No?
You know, I was trying to be humble there in that story. You know, I wasn't bad. I volunteered. I did that stuff. But always in doing that, I thought, you know what? If I really believed, you know, as I read in the Bible what Jesus wanted me to do, I wouldn't be living in this nice house. I wouldn't be driving. You know, I'm not a big in cars, but, you know, I have an okay car. I'd be doing something radically different. But, you know, I wanted to hang on to that stuff.
Hmm. Well, I heard a voice in the background there, and I'm wondering how your wife dealt with all this stuff.
Oh,
is she Catholic?
She was. She was.
Oh, she bailed too?
she bailed too, yeah. She's actually much more militant than I, because she's heard all this stuff, and I don't know, she's is a mom, and everything is just amplified. You know, she just can't stand what she sees as the hypocrisy that goes through the church.
Right. So has this changed the relationship between the two of you? Or what I'm hearing is you're both down the same kind of road now, so now your marriage is bliss because you're fighting the same enemy or something. I don't know.
Yes, not bliss, but I would say that it helped that I talked to her on a, you know, every day when I got home from work about what was going on at work and everything. So it did put us on the same kind of path. I don't know if I should take credit or blame for that, but... We seem to have come to the same spot.
The kids? How old are the kiddies?
Kiddies are four boys, 19 to age 7.
Wow. Good luck with that.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know what I mean? Like, you're screwing with your kids' spiritual lives, too, right?
Because yeah, that was a big thing for me, because I thought, you know, if I made a choice and I'm... if I made a choice, I'm going to hell for it. You know,
that's my
that's
deal.
One thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I'm going to make it for my kids. So, you know, basically they were in a youth programs at church, and they stayed in there as long as they wanted. Eventually my two oldest kids dropped out. Now my younger kids, they just stopped going to church with us, and they aren't in any programs or anything. So, you know, that's always a concern of mine. I don't know quite what to say, but we don't talk about, you know, we don't believe in God. It's sort of, you know, they believe in God, and so we treat it sort of like Santa Claus or something. We go along with it.
Well, I mean, I've talked to so many Jesus people who are sort of hanging on by the skin, what is it, the skin of their teeth? Is that the phrase?
Yes.
Anyway, and they're doing it 'cause for the kids, right?
Yeah, and I mean, there's sort of a hypocrisy in my beliefs now, in that, you know, I don't believe in it, but I'm not going to teach my kids because maybe I'm wrong. That's something that, you know, it's going to have to evolve. Like, my kids are young enough where, you know, I've got a little bit of time to before I, you know, level with them about what's going on. My younger kids, my older kids, they're not religious, though they, you know, they went through all the youth programs and everything.
Any of the big evangelical Jesus guys contacted you and said, hey, let's go out for Billy Graham, you know, I don't know, whatever?
No, Billy Graham didn't, but, you know, I've always had a good relationship with Rick Warren. He's always very supportive. Chuck Smith at Calvary Chapel asked me to out for lunch. I've got my whole desk at work is filled with workbooks and tapes and CDs and everything about how to get back. I will say this, the most arrogant people are the atheists. I can't stand those folks. Their comment was basically, you know, how come you're 46 and you know, only now you're coming to this conclusion?
Yeah, what took you is their point, right?
You dumbass.
Oh, yeah. I'm there with that. Yeah, well, there's a guy up here in Toronto, the religion reporter, Tom Harper. Have you heard of him?
No.
He bailed on the whole thing and basically is saying, yeah, Jesus never even existed, and he's into some sort of weird Egyptian mythological kind of stuff and quoting all sorts of smart brainiac people. And honestly, over the last 5 years of doing the show, I've said this a couple times, I can't believe the arrogance of some of the, but mind you, it rivals some of the arrogance I've seen in the evangelical scene too, let me tell you.
Well, there's something that really gets under my skin with those guys. But, you know, I think there are people that are much smarter than me that are atheists and much smarter than me that are Christians and Jews and Muslims. And, you know, so I don't know what the answer is. And, I it'd be awesome if I did. But, you know, I'm smart enough to know that I don't know. And other people that are much smarter than me have come to different conclusions. So,
former evangelical religion reporter with the LA Times, now reluctant atheist, William Lobdell. Just before we say goodbye to you, I know you've been asked this a million times, but have you figured out, other than some extreme cathartic experience, what would bring your faith back? I guess you don't have an answer for that, probably.
Yeah, I don't. You know, it's just like as dead as a doorknob. I mean, I've got an open mind. I'm not, you know, I don't shun it away. I'm still reading these things, but it is. It would take some electrical paddles and high voltage and someone to apply it to. I just haven't found that yet.
I love this quote from you. I think I'm the same person I was before. I try to be moral, volunteer, etc. That hasn't changed. The question of hell certainly gets my attention. I think now that when I die, it's much like before I was born. I just won't exist. That said, if there is a heaven, I'm guessing and hoping that a loving God will understand my screw-up. That's classic.
Well, I think if it's my son and he really tries with all his heart to, you know, believe in me or whatever, and he just can't, am I going to banish him, you know, for eternity, separated from me? I just can't buy that.
Well, we're going to open up the phone lines to our listeners right now, because what I found out in doing this show the last number of years is that Christians have the answers for everything. And so we're going to ask our listeners if they have some advice, or, you know, and I know you've taken advice up the wazoo over the last number of years or months or whatever. But we're just going to ask our listeners, what advice would they give you? Here you are, former religion editor for the LA Times. You covered it for how many years? 7, 8 years, something like that?
8 years.
8 years. And you've decided, no, I can't buy into the, you know, you were evangelical, man. You know, you probably had a bumper sticker. Did you? No, I hope not.
No.
Because then you got to drive properly, right?
If
you
no fish.
Oh no. Okay. But what advice would you give William Lobdell, Bill Lobdell? I appreciate your authenticity in this. I really do. I resonate quite a lot with a lot of your journey. I look at the insane nonsense in the North American Christendom scene, but my problem is. The only thing I can say that Christ hasn't quit on me, and I don't know whether mm-hmm. he's quit on you. I'm not all that. You know, theologically, I don't think he does that.
Right.
But I'm sometimes barely hanging on. But I got to remind myself I'm following Christ, not Christians, because I'm part of a wacky group of people, man.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep. The best advice someone gave me is get your eye on the guy on the cross, not the person behind the altar, and I always thought that was good.
Yeah, well said. All right, we'll say goodbye to you and let you go. Bill, I appreciate it. I'd love to chat with you again in the future. We'll take some calls now, and we'll get your life all sorted out for you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Take care, man.
Bye-bye.